Cox model. As we all know, Cox model is a milestone in inference for survival data. It is simple to interpret and complex enough to cover many practical situations. Statisticians, they use it very frequently, but they seldom realize how sensitive are standard procedures when you use the model. In my talk, I will try to present a fairly complete, robust inference for the Cox model, including the way the diagnostic graphs which would help verifying the goodness of fit of the model. I will start with the basic definitions, I think. So, Cox model is defined via the conditional hazard, where lambda zero of t is so-called baseline hazard, and the exponential of linear predictor. What we observe is survival time, censoring variable, and the explanatory variable zi, but we actually observe the minimum of the first two. We know which one attains the minimum, and we observe zi. Cox estimator maximizes the partial likelihood, which can be written equivalently as an equation which has to be solved. We can also estimate the accumulated baseline hazard via the Breslow estimator, first computing the Cox estimator, which is denoted by beta hat. It is well known that the two estimators are efficient, they are asymptotically normal, and they are commonly used in inference for the Cox model. To understand why things go wrong when we have perturbations in the model, it's better or it's easier to understand it when we write down things a little bit different way. The last equation can be written as in such a way that you can more clearly see the dependence of the estimator value on the empirical distribution function of the survival, censoring, and the covariate. We cannot actually compute this empirical distribution function, but we can compute the integrals which are there because everything depends on the observed quantities. You can also replace the empirical distribution functions by any distribution, and this way you get a mapping from distributions to the space of parameters. And then when you try to find out what happens around the Cox model, F denotes any distribution from the Cox model, then you find out that no matter how close you are to the Cox model, you will always get away, if you like, from the right parameter value. This is more or less like this. It's not exactly like that, but to fix the ideas, it's better to think that that's the way it is. FN. When you have independent, identically distributed random variables, then you can make a count how many of them, divided by the sample size, is less or equal than...
It's empirical of what? Of the.
It is empirical distribution function of observations that you get. Survival time, censoring variable, and ZI, the explanatory variables. Can I go on? Okay. Okay. It doesn't look much better if you would express the Breslow estimator as a functional of those distributions. This is just another way of writing that. And it was shown by a student of mine, Grzegorek, that you get the following phenomenon. No matter how close you are to the Cox distribution, denoted here by F, any distribution from the Cox model, you can always suppress at each t value the Breslow estimator or the Breslow functional to zero. Which means in practice that if you have outliers in your data and you use Cox model, then everything will be flattered in a way. Well, what is written down here, it simply means that the functionals which are used to estimate in the Cox model, they are highly discontinuous. So the way to bypass this difficulty is just to make them continuous. I found a family of estimates which are modification of Cox, and a student of mine, a modification of Breslau estimator. They are modification by introducing some weight functions. If you put functions A equal 1, you just get Cox and Breslau estimator. But any function A, well, reasonable function A, gives you a Fisher-consistent estimator of regression parameter beta and also of the accumulated hazard. So you actually have enormous family of alternative ways to estimate the parameters. And if you have this large family, you can find out whether there are A's for which you get actually very smooth functional. Well, it can be done in a way simultaneously, both for the regression parameter estimator and for the accumulated hazard estimator. Continuity is not enough because we want to have assessment of variability of our estimator. So a way to do it is to impose stronger property of smoothness. I will use it here. This is Fréchet differentiability. It is the most natural way of thinking about differentiating things if you try to transpose what you get in Euclidean space into infinite dimensional space. There are other notions of differentiability which are perhaps more useful in general in statistics, but Fréchet differentiability seems to be very useful in robust statistics. It has the property that if the functional is Fréchet differentiable, then you immediately get its asymptotic properties. You can explain it just in one line. If you plug, instead of distribution G, empirical distribution Fn, multiply things by square root of n, then by the differentiability on the right-hand side, you get an expression which is ready for the central limit theorem. Moreover, this expansion is in a way uniformly valid for distributions which are very close to the Cox model distribution. For anyone who cares about the p-values or significance level, this is quite an important feature because it gives you the stability in this regard. You can calculate the derivatives with the weight functions. Well, actually, I should say that problems of robustness or sensitivity of the estimators in Cox model was studied first by Samuels, who noticed that large z values can affect very much the inference. Also, the inference function for the Cox model was calculated in the paper by Reed and Crepeau, from which we could infer that there is, well, a lot of problems with inference for the Cox model if there are outliers. And I also studied myself the question, trying to understand what really affects, what is different about Cox model as compared to other models in terms of outlyingness. This is the formula for the inference function for the regression parameter. You can get also a little bit more complicated formula for the accumulated hazard. Notice that actually only the above expression stays as an expansion if you would look at the paper by Anderson and Gill. They use martingale theory. They wouldn't get linear expansion. That's why the expression there looks much simpler. The influence function for a Breslau functional, assuming that we have the differentiability, must be, of course, more complicated because at a certain point we have to use the function which was obtained for the regression parameter. Now, what weights are good? Which weights lead to differentiability? The problem which is here, actually, it goes further because you don't want to show things for a single weight because you expect that in this estimation problem, the choice of weight should be dependent on the true value of the parameter. So what you actually want to prove is that this differentiability holds for certain families of functions where you can adaptively find a way to the good ways. And roughly speaking, what you require is that they are smooth, that they vanish outside the bounded set, and finally, that the ratios which appear in the equation for evaluation of the estimators they behave properly. The conditions which are written down here, they actually aimed at this, what I have just said. Now, what ways are recommended? This is an important question because I have no results which would show that the estimation method is optimal in a very, formal way. The intuitive argument goes the following way. If you would know the true value of the regression parameter, then the ratio, then the product of lambda of t, the accumulated hazard, and the exponential of the linear predictor would result in standard exponential variable. So you should downweight the observations which are large, for which the product is large. And this was the basic idea to find a weighting function. There were several possibilities, but somehow the one which is written down here worked the best way. Actually, it does not satisfy the conditions which were written down earlier, but a smoothed version of this would follow them. No. I guess I... Yeah. Okay. So the algorithm for evaluating the estimators would go like this. You start with any robust estimation by which you get the regression parameter. Then on the basis of this, you improve in the second step evaluating weight using the preliminary estimator value. And then you go to another step, 3 and 4, where you actually use the most logical weight of downweighting using the product of lambda of t and the exponential of the linear predictor. You repeat the two steps until you get a stabilization. And with this algorithm, I have performed a small experiment, simulation experiment. You actually have here the accumulated hazard is 2 times t to the power 3. The true parameter value is 1. The sample size is 100, and you repeat it 20 times, and you try to see how the estimated accumulated hazards, they go around the black curve, which corresponds to the true value or true function for the accumulated hazard. When there are no contaminations, you can see that things look very well. This is for the Breslau estimator, and in the robust case, you will see that they also go around, but a little bit are more dispersed. But once you contaminate this, what is the contamination? You just change values of 5 covariates. They were originally standard normal. You just put values 2 for each. Normally, these values would not be considered as outliers. The point is that they are not outliers if the survival time related to them would be produced as it is indicated in the Cox model. And this way we make them independent. And you can see that the Cox estimator immediately disbehaves, while estimation of the accumulated hazard seems to be very much biased. So to say, with the Cox procedure, you sort of get something very different what you would expect as compared to the original design of the model. The robust procedure works well. If you increase the value, the true value of the parameter, you see the effect which was indicated in the description on earlier slides. Cox model just breaks down, everything seems to be flat. You will see it later on with examples with real data. And the robust estimator behaves properly. This is a good example to my lecture. I want to show the method the best way I can, but usually you would see that robust estimator does not behave worse than the optimal one, and actually it nearly always produces much lower bias and a little bit more bigger variance. Now, In order to make sure which method is better, you have to somehow justify how well the whole distribution is approximated by the data, or whether you can find an appropriate measure within the Cox model which approximates the data. The best way to do it is to compare the conditional distribution for subsamples of the data with a reality which is created by a non-parametric estimator, so to say, by the Kaplan-Meier estimator. The way it was proposed in a paper by myself and Minder was that we divide the whole data set into strata according to the value of the linear predictor, and then for each stratum you calculate the Kaplan-Meier estimator, and you subtract from Kaplan-Meier estimator the survival function which you get using the information already obtained in the Cox model, which is in the point 3. You're just averaging survival, individual survival functions in the Cox model. And then to see better things, you normalize it somehow. Now let's see again with Monte Carlo experiment how things would look like. This is not a big study, it's just a very, these are examples which I would consider typical, and we will use what we see here. It is supposed to be helpful to justify what we will get with the real data. So this is just one sample. We have 100 observations. The true regression parameter is 2. In the no contamination case, you would see that you would get slightly higher standard error for the robust estimator, which is in the lower part of the table. And in the contaminated case, you would see that the Cox estimator somehow selects a very different measure to what we would expect. And now let's look at the diagnostic graphs. First, without contamination. Since we calculate the difference between the Kaplan-Meier estimator and the estimator obtained on the basis of averaging of individual survivals for the Cox model, you can see that everything looks very well. The continuous curve corresponds to the robust estimator of the accumulated hazard, while the dotted line, this is for the Breslow estimator. So this is for the entire data set, and now let's get to the four quartiles. You can see actually that the two curves, robust and non-robust, they more or less coincide, and then you would have occasionally crossing the two standard error or the confidence bands of Greenwood. So things look more or less the same. And now if you go into contaminated data, then already the graph for all the data set look quite different. You wouldn't have this wiggling around the Cox, Kaplan-Meier curve. And if you go into the quartiles, you would see what really goes on. You do see that the fit which you obtained using the robust estimator is much better. The continuous curve, it sort of gets back into the bands which are given by the dotted line. And the optimal curve, it goes very much beyond. So it doesn't have to be always like that, of course, but typically you would see that the robust method would give much better fit to what is given by the Kaplan-Meier estimator. Now, the estimation procedure is adaptive, so we have to make sure whether we can assess the variability of the estimator on the basis of influence function, which actually uses weights where you put beta, which is the estimator obtained earlier. From the formal point of view, you have to verify whether the two expressions, the difference between them, converges to zero. You can actually do it in the following way. You can apply the results by Gine and Zine, they require that the family of functions, we have the influence functions at a certain point, fixed point beta, they are indexed by different weights, which are in turn indexed by beta, and they have to satisfy the condition which is phrased as uniformly pre-Gaussian. In this case, the condition follows when a certain Lipschitz condition is satisfied. There is a little mistake. In this line, I should write, instead of EF, IF of beta, I should write IF of A beta, the same way as it is in the second line. One can show that with a smoothed version of the weight function which is given here, these conditions are satisfied, which means that we have the right to use adaptively the estimator. And moreover, with this adaptive version, we can estimate, according to mathematical rigors, the variance of the estimator. But this is a very complicated theory. So you can actually get the same stuff looking, well, physically you can approximate one expression by the other. The way to do it is just to check whether the parameter which enters through the weight function makes the influence function smooth enough. If it is differentiable, then you can make a simple calculation which shows that this quantity converges to zero in probability, while this one, if the preliminary estimator is square root consistent, this quantity is bounded. So you actually get the same stuff without referring to complicated theory. In the estimator which I am using, I also, apart from the finite dimensional beta estimator, I use the estimator of the robust version of Breslau estimator. So the things actually are much more complex, but I believe that I can do it this way. The way which is presented by Ginet and Zinn, it seems to me that it would be harder, so at least for me. It is just a matter of certain belief. I believe that if you're smooth enough, then you get what you want. You don't have to go back to very complicated theory. At least to some statistician, to me, it is complicated. Okay. And now I want to present data sets which were, real data sets which were analyzed with this method. The first one is, in a way, it is a standard Veterans Administration lung cancer data. You have patients which had inoperable lung cancer and which were randomized into test and standard therapy. There were nine cases of censoring. You would have eight explanatory variables. The last one are probably most important for clinical reasons. Well, let's take a look at the estimation results. Which starts, I denoted the variables which, for which there is a difference, significant difference between Cox estimation and robust estimation. So you would see first in the saltapes squamous, in the Cox estimation you would get a quantity which is close to being significant, while in the robust estimation it goes down very much. The small cells are much more significant in the case of robust estimation than in the case of Cox estimation. And finally, the important treatment variable, it goes down to very much insignificant as compared to the Cox estimation. These are not just any differences. These are contradictory differences in the area which was actually the motivation for the study. So I don't know what you would do with this, but this is a real inferential problem, because the things that you get with Cox estimator, in a way, they contradict the things that you get with the robust estimation. One way to judge which is better is through those graphs which I introduced earlier. And you can see that for the whole data set, well, things look the way they should. But if you look at the graphs for the stratum, then you notice that the continuous curves, they actually in all the cases that they fit better what you get through the Kaplan-Meier estimator, which means that you get a better fit with the robust method than with the optimal one. I don't know if this does settle the question which method gives more reliable results in terms of those coefficients obtained earlier, but it seems to me that I would be inclined to believe the robust method. On the other hand, notice that the graphs for the Cox or the optimal estimation, they don't go much beyond the confidence bands. The second data set is the ovarian cancer survival data. This is also a randomized study. You have here just four explanatory variables, and I will concentrate on one. This is the treatment group. Well, if you look at the data now, you see again that the motivation for the study was to probably settle down whether the treatment helps or not. And you get contradictory results here. It is not only that you get, in a way, contradictory results, but also the size of the coefficient next to the treatment, it is doubled here. So when you look at the analysis of real data, you just pose yourself a question whether we are not missing something very important in statistical inference. Let's take a look at the graphs. Well, this is for the entire data set, so nothing may happen here. But if you look at the graphs for the stratum, you would see that there is not difference between the two methods, which is even more misleading in this case. And finally, the last data set is the Stanford heart transplant data. The data sets were taken from the R language. They have lots of data sets in there. And you would have four explanatory variables: age, surgery, year of admission, of acceptance, and transplant. And this is a good data set because nothing goes wrong here. The graphs are similar, and the results of estimation are also similar. You would recognize that it is not the transplant, it is the year of admission which really counts. I mean, I think this reflects the progress in ability to make the transplant. Well, this was my last slide. I just want to add a remark about things that we're working on. I didn't say anything about efficiency of the estimation method, but we have made comparisons with Sassieni's proposals. And all I can say now is that it depends which weight function you take. In one case, he gets better variance. In the other case, this estimator is better. This estimator has also one merit, namely the partial likelihood is concave in beta, so you actually have an easy computational procedure. And the modification which was given here has the same property. You actually get a concave function, so computationally this is an advantage. The other thing which is probably worth noticing is that there are other models which are used for survival data analysis, especially the additive Allen's model. This model probably is less sensitive to outliers than Cox model, because one of the problems with the Cox model is this, its exponential form for the linear predictor, while in Allen's model you would have just a linear term there. There is a study which compares the two models, but it concentrates on Cook's distance, so probably one acquainted more with robustness would do it a little bit differently. Thank you very much.
The chairman is grateful to the speaker for helping to catch up the time, but okay. We have time for some discussion, questions.
Yes. The ways that you use depend on the estimator,
Okay, but this exponential of the
linear predict
of x prime beta. Yeah. What happens if you just downweight high leverage x?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. Well, if you would have something like a high leverage point, probably then you would give a very, very big values for the exponential. I don't know if it may even break down in the computational processing. I don't know. I don't know.
And the other question is, you need an initial estimator. What kind of estimator are you using for as initial?
Well, the way I calculated this, first the Cox estimator was evaluated, and this was used as an initial estimator. Some people use just simply zeros to initial estimator. And in fact, you can take any weight function which you think makes sense for the initial estimator, because anyone is good. Later on, you replace it with a weight function which depends in a reasonable way on beta, just to make the inference more sure, so to say. Yeah.
Question? What about the adaptivity? Do you get the same distribution on the neighbor, on their own neighbors? So it's still pressure differential.
Well. The virtue of the Fréchet differentiability is that even though you use the distributions which are outside the Cox model, the variance is stable, I think. That's the main point. A compact differentiability is much more general. You can assess asymptotic distribution of many other things, but it doesn't have to be stable in this regard. While in this case you get stability, which I think it is another additional attitude for robust inference. People seldom talk about that. They would usually concentrate on the bias. But variance assessment is also very important. And probably one could do it probably differently, but Fréchet differentiability gives it granted in a way.
Okay. Any questions? Well, then, let us finish.